Welcome to the SBCN podcast, a production of the Small Business Community Network, brought to you by Brad Poulos, small business coach, entrepreneurship professor, and author of the Small Business Operator's Manual, a guide to running your small business profitably.
Everyone, it's Linda Ocon-Jenner here, co-founder of the Small Business Community Network with another SBCN Small Biz Podcast. Today we have a member of the SBCN who has recently retired from his role as Executive Vice President and General Manager of NWS. He has moved to Florida and is working on an investment there to get it off the ground. Hi Glenn, how are you today?
Hi Linda, I'm doing well, thanks. Thank you so much for having me today.
Well, I'm very excited because if I'd retired to Florida in the sun, I wouldn't want to be doing a podcast.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm wondering about should I have just retired or, but I think I still have another one left in me. So that's why I'm taking another kick at the can.
So for our listeners who, you know, have no idea who you are, because I said NWS, I wanted you to explain a little bit what you used to do before you retired to Florida, and then we'll move on to your new exciting news.
Sure. So I, in 2007, I started a company with someone else called Gap Wireless. And for 15 years, we ran the company. It became quite successful. And we went up and down. We had, you know, many ups and downs in the 15 years. But nonetheless, in 2022, we sold the company to private equity. And then Gap Wireless became under their banner NWS. And so which used to stand for Network Wireless Solutions, but again, it was another wireless company. And we sold wireless equipment to the Canadian carriers, and they were selling wireless equipment to the US carriers. And so it became a North American company. I became an executive vice president there, and I was there for just a couple weeks shy of 3 years. And then I retired on December 31st. And you know, usually the private equity things last around 12 to 18 months. So I'd kind of stayed my full amount. Maybe I overstayed my welcome. I don't know. That remains to be seen. Okay. But nonetheless, yeah. So that's what they were. They're a distributor. They bought equipment from around the world, brought it to North America, and sold it to Canadian and US telecom companies. Wow. And that's what they did.
And that's amazing. And when you came along to the one of the Small Business Community Network events with your brother, actually, that's another story. Yeah. A couple of years ago now, we had a full house, Glenn, because one of the things smaller businesses, new businesses, or even large businesses want to know is, what made you successful? How did you get to be rich? Joking. why you keep on at it? Because you obviously love your work now. You've moved to Florida, not to retire, but I think that you've retired there to start some other business. Would I be right?
Yes, ma'am. That's correct. So essentially, for the last little while after I sold the business, was working for the private equity. I knew that it would have a time stamp on it, and that it would end, right? And that's the normal way. They kind of buy the businesses. They kind of absorb what they can from the former owners, and then they bring in their own management, right? Mm-hmm. And so knowing that, and knowing how much I like the sun versus the cold, I thought, well, and I'm very affectionate about Florida. I've always loved coming to Florida. And, you know, I thought, how could I spend more time in Florida? And that's when I learned about the E2 visa. It's an investor visa. And that's where you make an investment in a U.S. corporation. You can start a company or you can buy a company. I chose to buy a business strangely enough, it was a former Canadian that owned it. But he'd been running it for 20 years in Florida, and he was looking to fully retire. And one thing led to another, and I bought his business, which allowed me and my wife to get visas to work in the U.S. I can work for my business. My wife can work anywhere in the U.S. She has an E2 spouse visa. Mm-hmm. And so, and it's a much smaller business than the business that I had sold in Canada, but I'm hoping that I can grow it a bit for a few years and then maybe resell it again, in 3 to 5 years and then maybe fully retire, you know. And so that's sort of the progression of what happened. So I've owned it for a while, but I wasn't working here day to day until I finished my stint in Canada. And then when that finished on New Year's Eve, on January 6th, I was in Florida and I started my new job. And
You are a glutton for punishment. Some call it punishment. I call it, you're a very clever man, because what I tell a lot of small businesses, new businesses, you don't get to where someone like you are, Glenn, without working hard, being passionate about it, liking what you do and knowing you can do it. So I do have a question, which I'm going to ask you in a minute, about what it's like, you know, transitioning from the one to the other. But are you going to share what the company is? Are you share, you know, what you do? Or is that kind of going to be a great big announcement at some point?
No, I can explain that now. Would you like me to answer that now?
I think we're all, you know, would like to hear what the company is, if it's the same kind of thing you've done before, if you're taking on a completely new thing, you know. So fire away.
Yeah. So the funny thing, yeah. So in selling your company, there's a no compete when you're an owner, and it's very enforceable. Unlike an employee in Canada, you can't enforce no competes any longer, right? They're actually illegal on employment agreements.
Oh.
But when you sell your business, it's quite a different story. And the no competes are highly enforceable. And so, you know, strangely enough, you know, like moving to Florida was good for me because my business was in Canada, the no competes in Canada, and it's around the telecom business, the telecom customer. So what I did was, in order to be on the safe side, I actually, I switched countries. So I moved from Canada to the US. So I'm good that way. And then I switched markets. So I switched from telecom into the power utility space. So people that generate and deliver electricity. I switched the products that I'm selling as well. The one thing that's the same though, is it's the exact same kind of business, just a bit smaller. Yeah. And so what we do is we buy equipment from high-end manufacturers around the world, and our salespeople demonstrate and sell those products to US customers. And so the way the business runs is exactly the same as the way the business in Canada runs. So I didn't have to learn like how the business worked. It wasn't like a restaurant or a software company or, you know, some insurance or something like strange way out of the, it's a distributor of high-tech electronic equipment, just like my old business, but in a different country, different market, different customer, different product. And so it allows me to sort of drop in quite easily and understand the how of it's done, but just the who and the where and the why and the what, that's the change, right? And so it's been an easy transition, you know, understanding how this business works versus the one in Canada. The company's called Prog USA, progusa.net. Mm-hmm. And it's the website shows the equipment that we sell. We're an American company. We sell to American customers. And but I am still through and through a Canadian. I just have to live in Florida.
It's okay. We're not going to bring politics.
Exactly.
No. My husband and myself are in the same boat. I mean, he works for, you know, an American company that has offices here. Obviously, it started here, and I've got clients. You know, we can't blame everyone and everything on a certain person.
Drop
that now.
Well said.
What I love about this, though, I love the fact that I was going to ask you the question. You really answered the question. Yeah. What's it like transitioning from a large private, you know, to the company, which is smaller? And you seem to have made that seamlessly. But people are scared of, you know, sales, you know, finding customers, finding clients. So I'm guessing you had all that ready made for you. You took on the same clients, or do you still have to find more sales for yourself, you know?
Yeah. So most of the problems for me personally are related to emotions and ego, and not so much customers and products, because yeah, this business is 20 years old, and the biggest customers of it are what are called investor-owned utilities. Mm-hmm. And these are companies like Pacific Gas and Electric, Duke Energy, Florida Power and Light. And these are all major, major companies like Ontario Hydro and, you know, wow, people like that, right? And so there's 50 investor-owned utilities in the U.S. Those are the biggest. Then there's the public-owned utilities. Are the next tier of customers. And then there's co-ops, which would be like Milton Hydro or something like that in mm-hmm. Canada, you know?
Yeah.
And so those customers, we've been selling to them for years and years. And of course, we have to always bring them new ideas, new products, mm-hmm. new things. But I didn't have to invent who they were or go find them. We know the names of the names and change over the years. But mm-hmm. fundamentally, you know, we have a database of all the customers. And so that part was easy. The challenging part is going from a company of 150 people as the EVP and an owner of the business and, you know, to a 9-man company, you know, that's a fraction of the size and all those kind of rights and privileges that you sort of you're afforded when you're in a part of a big company and you're on the executive leadership. And then I'm still on the executive leadership, but I've only of 9 people. Right. And so it's a huge sort of change. Right. And all change is very difficult for people. And even if you were changing from, let's say you're going from one company, you know, that was 50 people that was, you know, 10 million to 50 people that went to another company that was 50 people with 10 million. Like even going from exactly one thing to another that was the same, you'd still have all sorts of emotional, turmoil that goes with it. It's just change and people can be complicated, right? And so I've had to change my perception.
That's interesting. Yeah. So how did you change your perception though? I mean,
you got to basically suck it up, right? maybe the more liberal expense accounts and things like that, and, you know, or maybe a little bit more modest they don't go away, but the other thing is also, so there's what you're leaving and what you're going to and how it's different that causes stress. But then there's the stress of who you left behind, right? Like the people that you left behind, 150 people, so which, you know, some of them had worked for me since 2007. So, you know, like 18 years. And, you know, I was kind of the driving force behind the culture and the core values mm-hmm. of that business. And it was a lot, it's a lot on them too. And I mean, of course they're all adjusting and it's not like I'm not replaceable but for them, it's a huge change too. And I have to manage my feelings around their feelings. Right. But you got to get it done and things change. Like people are like, oh, I can't do it without you here and this and that. And I'm like, you'll be fine. You know, like just, the first few days they're upset and then they get over it and they're like, hey, am I still getting paid? And they're like, yeah, okay, well then I guess I'll stay, right? And
irreplaceable. Everybody's replaced. But what people can't replace is that culture, the bond, the trust, all the things that you built with them. Not everybody's like you, Glenn. Not everybody. I wish everybody in business was like you, because you really do care. You're not just about the dollars and how much you can make. You're about people. How many books have you written now?
I've just written the one book called Never Sit in the Lobby. And it's really about building a sales company and a business.
Thank you. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in that book, it demonstrates the kind of person you are. One thing that resonates with me is, you know, when you walk into an office building or wherever, a warehouse, wherever, and you're going to meet somebody, never forget the people who are there, you know, in the front line or on the front desk. And a lot of people do. A lot of people go, I'm too good for you. So that book is an amazing book for people to buy. But Another question I've got is, because it must apply to this business as well as your last business, loyalty. How do you keep your clients loyal? Because you said that in this case, in the new business, they keep returning, they keep coming back, but you find new products or services for them. But how do you thank them? Well, how do you display to them that you are, you don't just phone them once a year like some financial place you do and say, hey, we haven't seen you for a year, but we want your money. How do you
time
do
to keep
it,
your then? Money? Yes.
Well, how do you do it?
Yeah. So the stories in the book are how to get, act, and stay in front of your customers and to be a pleasure to do business with always. And so in coming to this new company, Prague USA, that's the core value, the core tenement that I'm bringing to the business. It's how to be a pleasure to do business with. Now, the company was already doing a good job at it. It wasn't like they absolutely needed me, but they actually had a lot of similar attitudes towards customer service and things like that. But it's kind of like, you know, we are a distributor of X, Y, and Z with more, you know what I mean? Meaning we bring a little more, which is that personal touch. Our people are all face-to-face, visiting the customers on a regular basis. It's like, how do you be a pleasure to do business with? It's easy. You just don't be a pain in the ass, right? and just do the opposite of that. Right. And that's basically what I tell everyone is, right? Like, if you want to be, I always tell people, learn about empathy, sympathy, and compassion. Learn what each one of them means and learn when to apply each one. Right. Because sometimes people mix it up, right? And they think, oh, I'm so empathetic. And I'm like, well, actually, you really suck at empathy. And so I really try to put myself in the customer's shoes and put, what are they going through? And then one of the big things I'm always talking about in the book and otherwise is active listening and building a genuine rapport, not a implied rapport. Like some people, you talk to salespeople and they're a little bit greasy and a little slimy or whatever. And they're acting all nicey nice, but you can tell that it's phony, right?
Yes, you can.
I'm more along the lines of assuming that I have no rapport with you when I first meet you, and I have to build the rapport over time, genuinely, right? Yeah. I have to get to know you on a minute by minute basis. And only at the appropriate moments will I extend liberties based on how much rapport I think I have, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm just walking in and meeting the CEO of a company, I might be really close to the vice president of engineering or something, or a technician or anyone, right? It could be the warehouse manager, but I don't know this guy. I'm going to be respectful, deferential. And until such times as I've built a genuine personal relationship with that guy, I'm not going to make assumptions or, assume that one thing means something else with somebody else. Right. And
I'm with you. So let me get this right then. It's not, giving your loyal customers, a calendar of beer or even a gift or taking them out to dinner. It's treating them with respect, caring about them, getting to know them and actually being there for them, which a lot of businesses don't do. And everything you've said, I'm glad you said it. You are so honest, the greasy salesman. And yes, I have built some good relationships over time, and You're one of those relationships. I can't thank you enough. Your loyalty to the SBCN to me, I can't thank you enough. But that to me means more than anything than somebody saying, well, I take my clients out to dinner or something like that. Because that's about, what you can do. Not everybody can do what you do. And you are a true entrepreneur. You are a true success story. But you're very, very humble. And I think this is why I like you. You're not one of these, I'm better than everyone. When I started Motivational Steps, my prime business many years ago, a lot of people who'd been in business a long time thought they were better than me, wouldn't give me the time of day. And then I meet people like you in this day and age, but all those years ago, I met three outstanding business leaders. I won't, name them, embarrass them, but they didn't care that I was a nobody with no connections, no money for my business, and was learning as I went. And they are still engaged with me with them. So you've hit the nail on the head, isn't it? It's about people. It's about how we treat them. What could you leave with us that's a really good, you know, tip for anybody who is actually going into the business of selling? You know, like I say, I'm not a salesperson, but obviously I've got a business, so I must be doing sales somewhere. But somebody who does sales all the time for a large company, what kind of advice would you give to those people if they're struggling at the moment?
Okay, well, I will answer that, but I just want to back up a few sentences mm-hmm. on what you were mm-hmm. saying about, you know, being genuine and professional, but also you were saying about taking them to dinner and things like that mm-hmm. and bringing them stuff. So all of that is also part of my report. Like, it's not like I don't
of course.
That.
Yes.
But I have a formula for like who I'm going to take out to dinner and who I would take out to lunch mm-hmm. and who I would maybe attend some kind of a sporting event with or something like that. And yeah. and those are, to me, those are tend to be things that are of a maybe not the lunch, but anything beyond that is like a reward for, you know, it's not like I'm bribing them after the fact,
no.
but I'm just saying, like, I don't like try to like get people's business by taking them out to dinner beforehand. It's more of a recognition for the, yeah. but when it comes to like freebies, like pens and golf balls and hats and mouse pads, you know, one of my tenets in the book is always show up with something in your hand and something in your mind. Now Ooh. It's not always a freebie, like a water bottle or a mouse pad or a, you know, your latest, you know, company giveaway, but sometimes mm-hmm. it is. And sometimes yeah. it's a quote, sometimes it's literature, but I always show up with something in my hand to give the customer. And I always show up with something in my mind to mm-hmm. share with the customer. Right. And so those things do perform a part of it. Right. And, yeah. And I would but only invite
if,
someone
if
out
I can
to
just
lunch.
Jump in though. Yeah. I can just jump in. A lot of people do that, especially in the corporate world, but only to get the sales.
Yeah.
And yes, they may do a once a year, taking them to the golf tournament, whatever. But it's impossible to say everybody cares. The way you've explained, and I've known you for a long time now, and you're not really pretending to care. You do care, because if you didn't care, you wouldn't bother with me. Joking.
Yeah.
No, but seriously. No. So those yeah. things are important, but some people only do them to get more sales. You are genuinely happy to get the sale you've got, and you are rewarding them, but you genuinely do care about your clients, your customers. Otherwise, you wouldn't be where you are today, would you, if you think about this right. rationally?
Yeah.
So it's very
yeah.
important that people know that. So, yeah. I know we're getting close.
Yep. And also one more thing about sometimes the best thing you can do for a customer is not taking them out to lunch, because you know them well enough to know that that's painful for them and they don't want to make small talk with you for an hour. Like, they like you as a salesperson. Hmm. They like it when you come by and you know exactly when to leave and exactly when to come. And and the last thing they want is for you to show up at 11:30 so that you can ask them out to lunch. And, you know, and they don't want, it's not something they like doing. Right. And so I know my customers
know
well
that.
Enough and not take them out to lunch or to take them out to lunch, right?
Yeah. It's back to knowing okay. the people and genuinely
yeah.
caring. And I think that was an excellent answer to my question before that, where
okay.
if you are yeah. in dedicated sales, you know, yes, take them out for lunch if you feel they're comfortable, but you've just hit the nail on the head. You know them well enough to know they feel uncomfortable. So I think yeah. it's all about the authenticity and being treating people the way you would like to be treated. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, definitely.
You've hit the nail on the head. You are so honest, though. You are so authentic. You're one of my people I really admire. I'm not just saying this. I'm not just saying this. I admire you because you've given the SBCN a lot of support. You've given me support. But if we protect, like, so I think I put a quote on the other day, something cut into the chase. If you don't tell lies, then you can always remember what you've said and, you know, what you've
done. Oh, yeah, that's very true.
That is
yes,
true.
Yeah.
And you mm-hmm. see, I use LinkedIn as I would if I was looking, you know, if I was looking for a really good friend who I could trust or somebody to take into my business. So when I use LinkedIn, if somebody's pretending to be somebody like you, Glenn, they can't keep up the pretense forever, and eventually it will show the real person.
Yes,
so I've checked you out for many years, Glenn. You are a real person and you really are honest, authentic.
Thank you.
And you're a lovely person, just like your amazing brother, who, as I say, he's a wonderful, wonderful human being. I wish you all the luck in the world. I really do. And I think I'd like some updates on how you're doing, because I guess my question is, could this business ever fail? Because it's been going many years. You've got the clients. Has it got the potential to fail, do you think? And if so, why? Maybe that's for another day. What do you think? That's another
podcast. Yeah, let's redo
that
one. But there's no business has any right to exist other than it's, you know, doing the next right thing and hoping for the best, right? Because anything can happen. Look, you know, there's so many companies that, you know, we could list dozens of them, right? Like that thought were household name and they're gone today, right? And so clearly anything can happen. Yeah.
And I go, why did that business fail? It had everything going for it. It was the first business to do A, B, C. Why did it fail? And that helps me as a business consultant.
Yeah.
Well,
for sure.
I think I'm going to let you go back to the sun and the beach and your wife and enjoy life.
Thanks.
I'm
a
in
lot.
My office in the cold. In Ontario.
Thank you. All
you
right.
Are
well,
so
good luck.
Lovely. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot.